If you will go ahead and do the roll call then, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Councilmember David Fuller will be calling in by teleconference a little later. Okay. But I do anticipate that he will be online shortly.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Councilmember Sabrina Combs.
Here.
Councilmember Linda Combs.
Here.
Councilmember Steve Carrington.
Here.
Councilmember Julie Berberick.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Pete LaFrance.
Here.
Mayor Edna DeVries.
Here.
We have a quorum, Madam Mayor.
Okay. If you all stand, please. And Councilwoman Berberick, would you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. What is the wishes of the council?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the agenda. Any amendments, discussion, questions? All those in favor, please say yes.
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 Those opposed, say no. And David is still not on.
Still not on.
We don't have to do a roll call then, since he's not on. Okay. Ready? So the agenda has been approved. The next item on our agenda is audience participation. Anyone is able to come and talk to the council regarding something that's on the agenda or any other matter that they want to bring the council's attention to. Audience participation is now open. If you're representing a group, you have 5 minutes. If you're representing yourself, you have 3 minutes. No one coming forth. Audience participation is now closed. Do I have a motion by the council to go into a committee of the whole?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we go into a committee of the whole. David's still not on, is he? Okay. We'll hear a click. Okay, thank you. And is there any amendments or questions or regarding the motion? All those in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Those opposed, please say no. Okay, we are now in a committee of the whole. And you have some things you want to present to us, sir?
As always.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, council members. Tonight, on the schedule that we've got was the pay plan. And if we get through that, we can go through the fee schedule and potentially the fine schedule. However, the fine schedule has no changes. It would be just if council has any recommendations at this point. The staff had no changes to the fine schedule. The pay chart pay plan begins on page 135. And that's basically what you've got in front of you is a handout that's got the current proposed pay plan, just a quick down and dirty comparison of some of our employees to other municipalities. And then for reference, the last page is the current pay plan, so you can see what the differences are between the two plans. And the last piece of paper on the table are potential amendments for the future based on discussions we've had in our insurance. Our final number for insurance came in, which wasn't what we'd hoped for, but we'll cover that later. We won't go into details about the numbers, but we expected a 12%, but basically came in at 13%.
Okay.
So the pay plan as proposed is a $1 increase per hour across the board. And you can see that's reflected, but it also includes two additional steps, longevity steps, E and F. So if approved as proposed, that gives us an increase anywhere from 4.5% to 1.1% across the board. So on the lower end would receive the higher percentage, and then on the higher end of the pay chart, the director level would receive a lower percentage. Rather than what we've done in the past, a straight 3% was the last pay raise that was given right before I got here. We did a bonus last year, and there was nothing done the year before. And then the next charts kind of show kind of a comparison on where we stand with other munis. The jobs none of our jobs really compare straight across the board. Our equipment operators are also, some of them are certified electricians. They all are capable of operating heavy equipment. In other places, they're unionized. Truck drivers don't mess with electrical stuff. So it's not a straight across the board comparison, but at least it gives you somewhat of an idea. The longevity steps, the reason I've added the request to add those is we've got folks that have been here for years, and we want to encourage folks to stay here for a good long time, but when you hit the end of the pay chart and you still got 10 or 15 more years of good employment, it's not always the a good reason to stay. Requesting to add the E and F, and what how that would work is currently you would serve in longevity step A for 2 years before you're eligible for B, 2 years in B before C, and then 2 years in C before D. And my proposal is once you hit D, you stay 3 years in D before you move to E, then 3 more years in E before you move to F. So that would take someone additionally another 9 years once they potentially hit D. And again, the $1 per hour increase goes there. And then the steps are the same, about 3% between steps. So it carries on the way our pay plan has been adopted. The increase that I've recommended is included in our budget. So the balanced budget does include this pay increase if it's adopted. If you choose to not adopt the pay plan, then that would we would have to back that out. It's about $159,000 is how we calculated this increase for the budget. If you desire to increase it even more based on our discussions tonight, then we'd have to calculate that. But, or if you wanted to do something less than a dollar. But when I looked at the other organizations, how we compared, I felt a dollar was at least gets us closer into the ballpark. And then we can discuss some other options in the future, whether we do a certification bonus of some sort or we look at another increase in the future as we move along. So this was kind of my starting point after last year's bonus, which was well appreciated by the employees, but that was a, you know, it's not the gift that keeps on giving, whereas this one would take you into the future. Unless there's questions about the actual pay chart and how it's structured, I'll move on to the next chart. I'm not going to go into the details that are in the book that talk about the individual breakdowns. If you want to see the man hour, the full-time equivalents, on how that's broken down by each level, it's in there. So it shows how many people we have in level one, how many people in level two, and so on. But I don't intend to get into that tonight unless there's questions about the book itself. But if you look at our police officers, how they compare to other places, it's recruiting and retention. And we don't necessarily have a huge retention problem, but I don't want to call it a problem because, you know, the guys that are moving on to, they're moving on to places where they can make a little more money with the same skill set they have, which is great. We encourage that. But again, on the other side, if the market's flush, we can hire a guy that's pretty easy to replace and not have to train. You know, it's not a big deal. But because we're a training ground, so to speak, for a lot of other places, we do have some turnover. We've been pretty steady for the last few years. We've got a good workforce, a great workforce, as you've all seen in the news. One of our officers in the news, they're doing some good work. But we have had turnover and we're stable now. But I suspect that we'll lose a couple of our young bucks that are looking for the adrenaline rush. You get it here in Palmer every now and then, but you know, there's some folks that just look for that. And there's some folks that, you know, you want to be an investigator. We only have one investigative position in ABI and Alaska Troopers. They have to offer those opportunities for guys to move up that just because we're a small force, we don't have. So recruiting and retention in the police department is an issue, and part of that issue is pay. We're not going to get to the point where we're paying the same thing as Alaska Troopers or APD or Fairbanks for that matter, but those are also higher risk areas that, you know, any police officer is exposed to risk every day. I like to think Palmer, you're not exposed to it as much as you might be in some of these bigger cities. But then again, it gets back to recruiting and retaining, and we want to have a professional police force. So this chart, I took out the policemen, or police officers, or the police department actually did most of the research for this. And then we also compared it to the AML salary chart. So it's accurate when we talk about other places. So you can see at the bottom the cities that I included in this. What I did was took the highest, the lowest, and then averaged across the board to get the numbers that you see on there. So that's the average of all those departments, what their police officer one or equivalent make from the top to the so starting is a starting pay if you start at the number one step, and then top in our case would be the longevity E. So comparing what the average is across the board, you know, Palmer was definitely in the bottom for the start. We're the lowest at the top. And as you can see how it compares, police officer to sergeant and then chief. And again, that's average. So there really wasn't anybody that was lower than us across the board. But once you stay in Palmer for a while, you start making that up. And there's ways we can hire to, you don't necessarily have to start at the beginning. But if you don't start at the beginning, if we start somebody at the top and someone's already at the top, the new guy is making as much as somebody that's been here for 20 years, we've got some disparity there. So again, we just look at the top and the bottom. It's not a good comparison. Where do guys grow into those? And that's why, the dollar increase will get us closer to the average. So that will help us, retain a little bit, probably not as much, but at least when we're recruiting, we're back more in the ball game than we would without that increase. The one that really is disparate amongst all of them is the chief. Our police chief makes a lot less than every police chief in the state. And he just loves it here so much. But that again goes to the professionalism and loving your job. And there's other things besides your paycheck that keep you in a position. So, and we have to account for that as well. There are some good things that Palmer offers. We do have fair benefits. But again, when you start talking about young families trying to have kids, the ones at the lower end are the ones that we want to get them here and we want to keep them here. And the one tool we have is the pay. So unless there's any questions, you can see the old difference. We're closing the gap. The new difference is the end result with this pay increase. We're still not completely out of the bottom. We're red across the board for the most part, but at least it's getting us a little closer to parity. And the troopers really, again, every law enforcement officer in the state is earning their paycheck. But with their 7.5% increase that they were given, and then another 7.5% that's coming on top of that, it's really hard to compete with. So we have to look at other ways to retain officers and how we recruit. So they've made it harder for everybody, not just Palmer. They've made it harder for the entire state police departments to recruit against that. But so now it comes to the point of, okay, what do we offer police officers that you might not have to do. So some of that's going to be training. We can offer specialized training to officers that helps our force. Some guys, we've had guys that are polygraph certified. We have guys that are special response certified. So there's things we can do besides just pay to help them stay engaged and want to be in Palmer, because Palmer is a great place to be. It's a very professional force. And so long as we keep the focus on that, then I think we'll be in good shape. We'll still have turnover. Still be a training ground to some extent, but I don't want to be where folks start plucking every time we get somebody trained. We've got to hire folks that want to be here as well. So when looking at the rest of the staff on how they stand, this is where it gets a little more complicated. When you start talking about public works and finance, how do they compare to the rest? We're not as bad when you have a first look at it. With equipment operators, mechanics, base our guys in public works, and then our accounting techs, and where they stand. The increase helps. Takes us in most cases from the bottom to somewhere in the middle. So this increase puts us back in the ballpark as not being the lowest paid. But again, when you work in Palmer, we want to make sure that it's a nice place to work. It's a great town. We don't require folks to live in town. It would be nice that everybody did once, and everybody, I would say, probably does want to live in Palmer. But some lifestyles, if you want to have a horse, there's not too many places where you can have livestock in the city limits. So folks we want to make sure that we provide a good work environment and have a living environment in the area where you can enjoy the fruits of your labor. But again, pay isn't always what does it. So again, this increase brings these folks a little closer in line to their peers. But as I said before, the equipment operators, ours are really a jack of all trades. You see them working on streetlights, you see them working on potholes, you see them plowing the roads, riding the graders in the summer, applying dust control in a lot of places that are unionized. you just can't do that. And in some of course, the smaller villages, they pay higher just because it's hard to get folks to come up there. So again, it's keeping Palmer in the game with pay, but also providing a workplace that's nice to work at. You've got a fair boss, you've got fair personnel rules, you've got fair benefits. And then again, you know, Palmer isn't a bad place to live. So as far as the pay chart goes, that's really all I had, was more to answer questions tonight if you had any about this proposal.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Sorry. Thank you. Just a quick question. So in these areas where we see a great differential between what we're paying and the average, just take mechanics start, for instance, $6 off. Let's see. If we accept this new pay plan, it'll be $6 off. Do you think it's time we start targeting these positions to try and make them more in line with what we're seeing across the state? Or are you not alarmed by this differential?
The differential on the low end was, and it still is, it's concerning trying to get something, because we have an unfilled position that we've had unfilled for going on 2 years now. And a lot of it is we have very stringent requirements that we kind of backed off on some of those when we established the new mechanic position. But looking again, when you look at this, yes, we do need to look at really at all of our positions again, but this one really jumps out and it's been proven by the lack of applicants that are qualified. Every mechanic for this that works for a city and was working on public safety vehicles, and that's really where we can't bend the rules too much, because these vehicles are used in emergency situations where they may be involved in high speed chase, or you know, they have to be able to make it up a hill to get to a fire. So the certifications for mechanics are critical. And that gets on to a piece I think we touched on earlier this summer, or later this summer, about having a certification bonus of some sort. So I'm looking at that and what that might look like. The piece with that, though, is more percent. I think we should go with a percentage bonus type thing for certain certifications, and then just nailing down what those certifications are. That's a discussion for a policy discussion. Is it, do we offer bonuses potentially for the entire workforce, or do we just offer certification bonuses for specific jobs? And either one is feasible. It's just how do we pay for it? So that's how I think we target somebody like a mechanic. Okay, if you have these certificates, you're eligible for a 3% kicker, or 1% or 2%, or whatever that is. Same thing with the police officers. If you have a college education and a certain police certification, then you're eligible for something as well. So that would be something that we're going to look at next year to propose. Unless we see the workforce shift and we have to do it sooner than later, but that would be something I'd like to propose in the 2020 budget. Is okay. What's the next step? We've got the general pay in the ballpark. How can we take the next step and encourage our employees to better themselves? Because that's really what it is. We run the risk, especially when wastewater, those guys get certified and Anchorage offers $10 an hour more. So we've already seen that once. We got somebody certified and, you know, they dangled a little money carrot, and guys are young. You know, they don't mind that commute when you're 26 and you don't have a family and you're making quite a bit more money. So that's the other piece. We make sure we want to balance it. If we're going to give a bonus for you get to certification on your own, we run the risk of, you know, just losing the bonus. But the other side is paying for the education and then requiring some kind of commitment. If we're going to pay for your college or pay for your certification, then you've got a commitment to stay with us. Problem with the wastewater is it's not so much paying for the education, it's having time in the job. So they get usually come to us with all the written requirements done. Job Corps is a great source of certified kids. And I say kids, they're kids to me. They're in their 20s. They come work for us either through the intern program or come to work for us as an employee, and then they're just getting their time in the job. And once they hit that, they're certified, and now they're eligible for big money. So it's good that we have a source of the young guys, but we've got to we've got to keep a couple of them like we have with our utility foreman and our last two that are getting ready to retire, our old guys. They've been here for 10, 15, 20 years. So it's hard to replace that with – it's hard to recruit somebody in that's got the kind of skill. So we're trying to grow it on our own. But it gets, again, back to Palmer's a nice place to work. It's a great place to raise a family. We have fair benefits. You have a fair boss. So really, young guys, and I was the same way, young guys don't want to hear that. But you plant that seed, and eventually it takes, and you get guys that will stay. Maybe one out of 10 will stick it out for 20 years. It's just finding that one out of 10. So, but yes, that's the one that really jumps out as a mechanic at the starting wage. And that's our mechanic one. It doesn't have as much. And then the high end, the mechanic top, that's our mechanic two. So it's a pretty wide range. But again, we haven't had much luck finding somebody with the basic certification. So we may just have to hire somebody that doesn't and provide supervision when they're working on those vehicles until they get certified. But that again takes away from our one mechanic. He's not a supervisor. His job description isn't a supervisor. He's a mechanic, so it takes away from that. So that's kind of where we are with that along those lines.
Sabrina Combs?
It's concerning to me that we have positions that have been posted for 2 years, and I don't think we can wait until the 2020 budget to think about looking at these positions. And I would just challenge us to maybe by mid-year of next year have some sort of review in place where we've reviewed each of these positions and grab those ones that jump out and talk about what we need to do, because retention is key. And so I would hope that we would do it much sooner than the 2020 budget.
Councilwoman Linda Combs.
Yeah, thank you. I like the way you put this together, by the way, and it does let us home in on a few things like the starting mechanic thing, which we've heard about for the last several years, about how that has been so difficult to do. And I really want to stress that I appreciate so much having been in similar positions on different budgets over the years. It is so difficult to compare job positions, you know. It's very, very rare that you get apples to apples. To hear you express and explain to us, as well as the public, how you can't do that, I'm really pleased with that, because I think that helps us hone in on how we are trying very hard to be fair. I'm concerned with the police officer schedule because, as everybody knows, public safety is number one on everybody's mind these days, that no matter what level in what municipality you're at. And I know that the state, with their 7.5% and then up in the game even more, made it difficult for everybody, but it was necessary. I'm sure you've all heard the stories, and I don't want to hear the stories here about our folks getting trained and then finding out it really isn't that difficult to move somewhere where they're going. It's not just the dollar amount for the daily work. Hopefully these young people, as we're discussing, that we're also giving them the information that they need to know. We're asking them, all of our employees, more and more to do their own retirement. You know, they have to make all these decisions now that, let's face it, in the past, employees, particularly municipalities, didn't have to do. They were riding along. They were going to get a retirement package. They didn't have to make decisions about where they were going to invest, how they were going to do it. So that's another big part of the piece. I know that I feel confident that you all are taking care of that at this level, but I think we need to make a commitment on the police officers to look at it more than once a year, to look at it. I'm sure you guys do, but bring it to us and let us know where we're standing on this and what we can potentially do. Because it's such an important part. I have talked to police officers who have left, and most of them all would have agreed exactly with what you said. Palmer is a great place to work. Palmer is a great place to live. But they do have to make other decisions. In the meantime, we have an absolutely outstanding force, so let's make sure that we keep them at least a little happy with us. But thank you for your presentation.
Any further questions or comments? Okay. Do you have any parting things on that, or are we done with that? That's okay?
That's all I have on that one. Again, okay. It's a start. I don't know that we can go 3 years again without doing something with the pay plan, but this, again, like, it's a start. Just keep as a work in progress, I think we'll be okay.
Right. Yeah, as we watch the sales tax and, you know, our revenues too, you know, as the year comes along to see how that's going to go, you know, so those are, you know, all of those decisions could be made.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So to kind of take a break from the book, the fee schedule is next, and what I'll do with that one is go over the changes, but I talked about the insurance a minute ago, so that you have kind of an idea of numbers. We're just not ready to make amendments. But the sheet you have in front of you is basically things we've discussed. The bottom piece is a golf course. I talked about the golf course, and we need to have an amendment for the future golf course contract. So that's that box amendment four. Recommended. These are all recommended. But when you look at item one, our insurance came in at 13%, which is basically a $17,000 increase from what we budgeted. So we had a $12,000 surplus, so $17,000 takes us into the hole. So I basically needed to come up with about $5,000 in cuts in order to make it a balanced budget again, because I really don't want to dip into the general fund for operating costs. So my recommendation was the first two, and you can... If you don't like these, it won't break my heart, but I thought they were easy ones to do. The community council watch that was discussed when the clerk presented, the $2,500, it wasn't used last year. The police department, we increased their community watch program by 1,000 this year. So I feel that if we take that $2,500 out of the council, we increased your council grant program to 15 if you approve the budget. So I felt that would be something that we wouldn't miss as much. So take that out of the budget to help pay for the increase. And then the last one to bring it to a balanced budget again would be to take the Christmas decorations back down to $7,500. And then as Christmas comes next year, if we have, that's in our roads budget. So next year when we get ready to do lights again, if we feel that $7,500 won't cover it, we can adjust from our roads budget. We generally have funds left over there. Similar to what we're doing this year for City Hall, we're going to adjust to cover City Hall this year. So I felt that was another one it's an easy one. It was an increase of $2,500. We just won't increase it. We'll let 2018 number ride, and that will bring us back to basically have a surplus of $424 after the increase in insurance. And that's what this sheet is about.
Okay.
I always get asked to look at my crystal ball or do my voodoo magic. So my projection at this point in time on November 27th, 2018, on where we're going to be on December 31st of 2018, I'm projecting $604,903 underspent.
So, and the figure again, 604,903,
if you want to round that to 600,000. And again, this is if we continue to do business as we've done since August. And our revenue projections look to be over our projections by $145,922. And the reason those aren't zero is because the formula I use based on the last 10 years of data gives me that kind of detail if the year continues like it has. So basically we're looking at $750,000 potentially going into our general fund. I would say safely we could probably project $500,000. Gives us a little cushion there if for some reason something happens in the next 5 to 6 weeks. So at the year end, I think we'll have a surplus of $500,000, safely say $500,000. For sure, I would bet my paycheck that we'd have $250,000 left. Probably wager maybe half my paycheck on having $500,000 left. I wouldn't wager anything on having $750,000. But I think we can safely count on $500,000 left over from 2018 at the rate we're going.
Okay.
And Fred Meyer's brought in a lot of other stuff for Thanksgiving, for Black Friday. So I think we're going to see a bump in their November sales. We won't see that till December. But they had some electronics on the floor, TVs and things like that, which are big ticket items.
Right.
Which we don't normally see in Palmer. So I'm counting on that to help get towards that over revenue that we're projecting. But right now, as of November, our projections for November was $145,000 already over our projections for revenue.
And when is Wendy's supposed to open? Is that next year?
It's next year. And we didn't account for that in our budget, in our revenues. So mid-year we can take a look at that. But restaurants are typically in our top 20. So if they are as productive as the other fast food chains or national chains, I suspect that they'll break into the top 20, if not in 19, in 2020. And that generally is $75,000 or above in sales tax collection. So
okay, good.
There's only so many burgers that the area can support, but they're the experts and they've done their market research and they say they can come in and be productive. And with growth and everything else and the way folks are buying that kind of food, I think it'll fit in.
Yeah.
Not pizza.
And the new gas station, too?
They're supposed to start construction soon, so I suspect they'll be online in spring. It's a gas station. Again, gas stations are our top five for sales tax collection. And they've done their market research, so I suspect they'll be in the top 20. I don't know if that'll adjust everybody else because there's only so many cars in the valley. But
right.
That's
right.
The car wash will be, I think, their biggest bump for us will be the car wash because there's not a car wash of that type in Palmer. There's a car wash, but it's not the same type.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So those are the general pieces. Move on to the fee schedule. So for 2019, it starts on page 163. The first change is on page 165, and that's on tie downs, aircraft tie downs. Last year, we increased the fees on tie down spaces A and C, the smaller portions, and B, the smaller portions, but we didn't increase Apron Charlie or Apron C on the larger spots. We thought that would be too much of an increase all at once. Airport Superintendent, and I support this, recommends that we bump those larger spots up this year. There's been some discussion at the AAC as well. So we felt that this would be appropriate this year. We didn't do it last year. We felt it would be appropriate this year to raise those. And those are for the large spots. There's really not much differentiation right now. People just pull in. But they are marked as large spots and small spots. So if we're gonna provide a large spot for a large aircraft, we want to make sure that the large aircraft can have a place where they can park.
Okay.
The next change is on page 166. And that's a change for our bed and breakfast application fee to have the appropriate term, which is short-term rental and annual renewal. And that was $75, an increase of $25. Next change is on the depot, the community center, which is on page 168. Taking the daily rate on Monday through Thursday from $220 to $225, not a significant increase. The big thing that you'll see there is we've taken out the long run, the recurring, we've changed it to just a recurring. So we've raised the rates. Actually, it's not really a raise. We just took the rates that we currently have and in one side and the rate from another and combined them. So to make things a lot easier, when we talked about the scheduling of the depot, there's no longer the cutoffs. It's you rent it for 1 to 14 days, you pay the daily rate. If you rent it for 14 or more, or 15 or more, you pay the recurring use rate. And again, we raise that by $30 for both of those. So it's not as complicated. Our intent was to not adjust the rates so much this year because we changed the scheduling policy, which was we felt was pretty significant. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that affects use. And then 2020, because we have had the discussions about raising the rates because they are the lowest in the valley, probably the lowest in the state. But if use goes down because of the way we schedule, we'll be able to determine it's because of scheduling and not so much because of the rates. But 2020, I think we'll need to look at a fairly significant increase in our rates. Not so much that we're the same as Menard because it's a different facility,
right,
but at least we're more competitive with what it costs to.
On the minimum rental for the 15 calendar days, do they have to reserve those all at the same time, or so would say somebody just reserved a couple days, you know, or day each month or something. And then, like, in November, we found out they were the 16th day or something. So how are you going to do that?
We could do it that way. we haven't done that way in the past. Once you hit a certain point, then we'll prorate the rates. So if you rent for 13 and you don't think you're anymore and you come back and you rent for another 13,
then we'll honor the
recurring use.
Okay.
And that's consistent with what we've done at this point.
Okay.
What it does, because of the way we do our scheduling now, you might already plan to rent the facility for 20 days, but you can't schedule it out more than 6 months in advance if you're a certain category, so you wouldn't be able to take advantage of the rate because we won't let you schedule it.
Right.
So that was a thought process on, you know, okay, you pay the rate until you hit it, and then we'll prorate until so that you're meeting that rate. There's some uses that they can schedule for a full year out, so they can schedule all 20 days. But there's some uses that you can't schedule more than six. I think it's 6 months.
Right.
So if you want to schedule 10 days in January and 10 days in December, you're not going to be able to book those. Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, go ahead, sir.
The next one is on page 170, mm-hmm. and that's the false alarms. It may look like it is a significant increase for a couple of those, but this is in line with the rest of the borough and the Anchorage Bowl. We really want to encourage folks to make sure their alarms are working, and we're not responding to so many false alarms. So this isn't just in line with what's done in the rest of the borough with the departments, and it brings us in line. If there's other areas that you highlighted you want to increase or decrease, by all means, that's subject to amendment. Page 174 is our water and wastewater charges. Those reflect the 9% wastewater increase and the 5.5% water increase that we discussed as part of the enterprise funds. On page 175 is the 5% solid waste increase that we discussed as part of revenues. So that's 175 and 176. The 5% increase in solid waste is reflected in those rates. And that's the last page, unless I'm missing one, for the rate schedule or the fee schedule.
On page 173, for the permits, especially like for the water and sewer permits, have we done, for the water and sewer connection, water new for $400, have we done any kind of analysis to see if that comes anywhere close to compensating for our time, or are we concerned about that, or is it, talk to me about that.
We haven't done a study on that. It's not a concern at this point,
okay.
But it is something that we'll need to look at as more development happens commercially in our areas.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is when we look at the whole water, wastewater as an enterprise fund.
Right.
At some point in time, we're not going to raise the rates. We've already projected that the rates will be a 3%, I think, next year, steady.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of increasing homeowners' rates, there's other rates we may want to look at raising to keep our enterprise fund up with inflation. So this would be one of them that would capture some of that difference instead of raising the utility rates across the board.
Okay. And I can't remember if we discussed it at this table or not. It seems like to me we did, because right now we don't charge a fee for the sign permits, right, for political.
Right. That is correct.
And did we talk about doing that sometime or another?
I don't believe we've talked it at the table, no. I mean, there's been some discussion at staff level on whether to do something like that, but we didn't take it any further.
Okay. And are we spending any staff time at all following up regarding, you know, what's it? We're getting close to the 30 days after the election now, so do we have any... Have we had any complaints or anything like that?
No complaints yet, but there are still a couple of signs up. The piece with political signs, my sense is The intent was to keep the political sign cost at zero for local elections. When I mean local, I mean within the city.
Okay.
And I don't know that we would have a different rate for city elections as opposed to borough, state, because we're seeing more signs really for non-city elections.
Right.
From a city standpoint, do I care if you pay $25 for a sign to run for a state house or a governor or a national office that's, you're generating all kinds of donations. What we were really concerned about, I thought, was this table keeping the cost down for the citizen to run for council. So it's the second and third order effects, or, you know, everybody else that has a political sign gets the benefit of that. So we can take a look and work with the attorney on, can we have a fee for something in the outside city elections if that's the direction we want to go.
Yeah, I don't know. What other council comments?
The cleanup is typically for outside the city elections. I mean,
so that's where we've had had to use the manpower. My concern is that wherever the manpower is that we're spending it for the city, that that's covered if there isn't a fee, or if the fee needs to be increased, that we're covering the manpower costs, you know. So, Councilman Carrington.
One thing to maybe keep in mind as well is just by looking at maybe we charge for, you know, signs that are 4 foot or bigger, which, you know, they become more of an issue for wind issues, as well as those are the ones that I would think more work would be required to deal with.
Most of our work is one, the application process to begin with, filling out the application. And then the other is encroachments into rights of ways or sight lines, things like that. We don't typically collect signs that are left out. We'll send, again, the manpower is spent on the phone, or sending a letter to folks reminding them it's been past this time. I know Wasilla does have a fine for signs being in the wrong place. If the city will collect them and you can pay to get them out of jail, so to speak. Uh-huh. We haven't really had to collect signs. Most folks are pretty responsive when you tell them their sign's in the wrong place. And we really, and the right-of-way enforcement's, it really hasn't become a real issue in Palmer, although there's a lot of signs. Probably 75% of the signs are stuck in the right-of-way and they're not supposed to be. It's supposed to be on private property. Folks just don't understand where the right-of-way ends. We don't have them clearly marked.
Right.
We go out with a surveyor and start collecting signs, but yeah, until it gets to the point where they're really a nuisance, then we really haven't spent time on that. But again, most of it has been from outside, for non-city council seats, elections.
Candidates.
Yeah, we're seeing the signs. The ones that are still up are the ones from Senate, State House.
Right, yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do have a little bit to add to that. That I think, addressing your question, the staff time for issuing the permit has been minimal. Therefore, that's why we've also said that it's free. And I completely agree with Nate as the history behind why we have it for free. The permit does say in here, and it's very clearly explained to the candidates for city council, that upon the property where the offending sign exists and is not removed within the 15 days after the election, it will be removed and a bill will be sent will be generated for the cost of removal. So the sign does allow for us billing out removal of the sign.
Okay.
So you're asking, are we recouping cost if they're going past that 15 days? The permit is very clear that we do recoup that cost, and it is actual cost of removal.
Okay. All right. So. But I was thinking it was 30 days, but 15 days, so we have some violations then.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments on that? Any other comments on the fee schedule? Anything that you want to address on the fee schedule? Anything we need to add for fee schedule or remove? Anything that we're charging for that you think we shouldn't charge for or anything? No? Everybody's fine?
I would say they're relatively low, but it's not a revenue generator. We shouldn't look at fines being the source of revenue. But at some point, we're going to need to raise those just so Mm-hmm. It is so that it does become a penalty, which is supposed to be. But at this point, I don't see that as being for okay. this year.
Okay.
The next meeting is a review of CIP. Mm-hmm. So any projects that we want to put in capital or not, any other new ideas or projects that you want to add to that, that would be the appropriate time. And then I would also recommend that any amendments to the operations budget that you have or want to make, that we discuss those at that time. So that'll give us next week, and then the 11th is our last slated meeting. So any changes we make on the 4th or amendments or recommendations, we can, if it generates an out-of-balance budget for the operations side, because our capital is, we handle that differently, but if we make changes that put our operating budget out of balance, I'd recommend that you give me at least a week to figure out if you don't propose, if you propose an increase in costs and you don't come with a counter to that, mm-hmm. give me a week to make a recommendation. And you can still, I mean, it's your budget at this point. I presented a balanced budget. If you want to take from the general fund for operating funds, that's your call as policymakers. But I would ask first, give me a shot to find somewhere to cut something so we do continue with a balanced operating budget.
Right, yeah, because we have to have a balanced budget.
Yes.
Okay. Further questions or comments? Okay. Can I have a motion for us to come out of the committee on whole, please?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we come out of the committee on the whole. Discussions, amendments, comments? Okay. All those in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Those opposed, say no. The yeses have it, and we are on out of the committee on the whole. Record of items placed on the table.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We have two items placed on the table. We have the salary spreadsheets, and we have the recommended amendment table.
Okay. Council comments? Do we want to need to go around the room? Does anybody have any council comments? The only thing I would like to ask, I do not believe that Councilman Fuller has signed in, or so I have... the council would like to excuse him then from this meeting. We need to have that consent, or that you prefer a motion, do you?
No, it's just a...
Okay. Is there any objections? That's what I'll just ask, to excusing Councilman Fuller then from this meeting. Okay. All righty. So with that, we will adjourn the special meeting, and we will see you at 7 o'clock.